From KQED Public Radio and the California Report, this is the Capital Notes podcast for Friday, June 10th. I'm John Myers from KQED, and I think some people think we weren't going to do a podcast today.
Well,
it's so late in the day for us.
Well, news is late breaking.
Yeah, exactly, and that's Anthony York from the LA Times, who both he and I have been on late breaking news today, have we not?
Esoteric and significant, though it may be.
Esoteric and significant in the same breath, indeed.
Yeah.
So we've been watching the draft maps of the Citizens Redistricting Commission, and I think that's probably most of what we'll talk about. We got to kind of loop into yield budget because that's just what we do on this podcast year in and year out.
Day in and day out.
Yeah, well, we've gone the long run there with the years, unfortunately. So let's talk about something brand new, sort of, with the asterisk being sort of that it is all not set in stone. So the commission released its draft maps for the legislature and Congress and the State Board of Equalization. We're going to do the whole podcast on those Board of Equalization districts.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm not up on those BOE maps.
I'm telling you, that district, three district, that's really controversial.
Out. Jerome Horton, George Runner, Michelle
We will not
Steele.
Be talking about the Board of Equalization in this particular podcast. So sorry, that'll be a different time.
Next time, Betty Yee. Next time.
120 legislative districts, 53 congressional districts, 14 men and women on the Citizens Commission. I feel like a Harper's Index here for a moment.
Exactly. And how many lawsuits?
And yet to be seen. And massive amounts of tweets and data crunching still to come. Anthony, you spent some time looking primarily at the legislative districts. I've had
some
to kind of been and some congressional, and I've been kind of stuck with both. But let's be macro first, big picture. What do you think stands out here in this process?
Well, I think that it reflects the maps both in Congress and in the legislature. The early indications are that it reflects the political demographics of the state. I mean, over the last 20 years, the percentage of Californians who register as Republican has been dropping consistently. It's now at about 30%. It's as low as it's been in the last 20 years. And that's going to be reflected in these maps. It looks like this is probably the early indications are, and again, all the caveats that this might change and the election, every election is unique and different, but early indications are that Democrats are going to pick up seats. In Congress, it could be as many as four or five.
Yeah, I was going to say three to five is what you hear.
And not only that, in addition to the political demographics, it's also the other demographics. You have the long-awaited Latino seat in the San Fernando Valley in Los Angeles has emerged, and Tony Cardenas has already announced his candidacy for that. You've got the Latino seat down in San Diego that is finally emerged, and the incumbent there, Bob Filner, who has been challenged by Juan Vargas, the state senator, in the past. They're both Democrats. Filner now saw the writing on the wall, has decided not to run for re-election, and will run for San Diego mayor. And Vargas is going to run for that congressional seat. So
to the point where Vargas was being called Congressman Vargas jokingly on the floor of the state Senate here on Friday.
And he's not the only state lawmaker. I mean, Assemblyman Anthony Portantino, Senator Gloria Negretti McLeod, Assemblyman Jared Huffman, all these folks are now looking at potential congressional runs.
And perhaps more when you look at some of these districts. I mean, because there are 13 empty seats, at least the districts that are drawn that currently don't have an incumbent. We're talking Congress now,
right?
Or congressional. And you know there are going to be members of the legislature looking at the registration data, even at first blush, they go, well, that may not be a seat perfectly favorable. I bet you they're going to spend a little bit of time asking a consultant to just look at the numbers and double check.
Yeah, and you've got, you know, the conventional wisdom is, well, you have situations. I mean, the counter to that is you have situations like where I believe Jerry McNerney, John Garamendi, and is it Pete Stark are all drawn into the same district?
Garamendi's not in that district, I don't think.
Well, there are three incumbents drawn into
the district. I was going to go down the list in a moment,
You know, and so some of them will just move. And Congress, unlike the legislature, there's no requirement that you have to live in the district, but, for example,
Doris Matsui and Tom McClintock both live in Matsui's district, but McClintock represents the foothills, and maybe he'll get a house up there. Who knows?
Tom McClintock represented the legislature from Santa Barbara. Dan Lundgren was a congressman from Long Beach, and now they're both Northern California congressmen.
Right.
So, um, but um, But regardless of where they live, and it's not always as easy as just being able to walk into a district. I mean, you alluded to a point there. I mean, these new districts, a congressional district is roughly what, 700,000 people,
yeah,
and and you know, a lot of people are going to be representing folks that have never voted for them before, even if they've been in political office for decades. So
I want to go back to the macro in a minute, but since you brought up some of the micro, one of the fascinating things from the early number crunchers, who are all political number crunchers, so this is all with a grain of salt.
Right.
I mean, the problem is that the commission, I mean, people who aren't following this may not know this, the commission expressly did not use political party registration right. data. And what I find, you know, is one of the great ironies of this is that a process that was enacted by the voters to make political change in politics, did not use political data to make that change.
Well, no, but it was not. But it was. But the criticism of the process is that it had become hyper-political.
But that's an observation.
Past,
it's an observation. You know. The process was changed to create
because
to change politics.
Political.
Yeah, because
right.
I wanted a different kind of politics. But anyway, because that data wasn't used by the commission, you have to really then go through people who are smart with computer programs, which is not me.
Who are spending money on this, who are the partisans.
Yeah. Or big news organizations like yours. Yeah.
No. Or, well, or, you know, strange analysis from other news organizations.
There's all kinds of analysis out there.
Yeah. There's
so, but if you look at the early discussion of these districts that I had called today, too many incumbents. Let's play the game of too many incumbents. You've got Jerry McNerney and Pete Stark in the Bay Area drawn into a district together, it looks like. In the Central Valley is a threefer. Jeff Denham, Dennis Cardoza, Jim Costa, all into one district together there. Elton Gallagher and Buck McKeon drawn into a district together down in the Ventura over eastward region. Howard Berman and Brad Sherman. Berman and Sherman.
Yeah.
Rumble in the Jungle, or in L.A.
In the Jungle.
You've got Linda Sanchez and Laura Richardson apparently drawn into a same district. Joe Baca and Jerry Lewis drawn into a same district. Daryl Issa, Brian Bilbray drawn into the same district.
Did Loretta Sanchez end up with Rohrabacher or no?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
But Dana Rohrabacher and John Campbell into the same district. Filner and Davis we've talked about, but Filner running for mayor, so probably that's been resolved. Xavier Becerra and Lucille Royal Albard in the same district, I think.
Huh.
Gary Miller, Judy Chu.
Yeah, well, like, I mean, if you're talking macro, I mean, one of the other macro.
And I hadn't
things,
gotten macro really yet. That was micro. But go ahead, go for it.
Well, but you talk about the Miller district. I mean, one of the macro things is that it looks like, you know, there are two Republicans now who represent a portion of L.A. County, Gary Miller and David Dreyer. It looks like both of them could not only will be sort of purged from L.A. County districts, but could find it difficult to find another seat to run in.
And yeah, so, and that list that we were going down doesn't even reflect incumbents into districts that would be very hard for them. Dreyer is a great example,
right.
which has been drawn much more as a Latino district, which has long been discussed because of the demographics
right.
of where Dreyer lives.
Now, the other thing, the maps as of now.
As of Friday.
And this, you know, you got to take this all with a grain of salt because it's early rough draft analysis on hypothetical maps. So, you know.
Having said that,
let's dedicate the next half hour of our lives to it. But having said that, as of now, you could have a situation where there are no Republicans in Congress from L.A. County and no Democrats from Orange County. You know, the Latino portions of Orange County, the, you know, parts of Anaheim and Santa Ana have been divided up by these maps. And so you have a situation now where Loretta and Linda Sanchez could either be, you know, face tough elections, or in the case of Linda Sanchez, could move more into L.A. County into a Democratic seat. So, you know, but a lot of that could change. I mean, there will probably be a Voting Rights Act challenge saying that there has to be a Latino seat in Orange County. And so we're going to see some of these lawsuits in the days and weeks ahead, I'm
sure. But I want to back out to one of the macro points that I think is just strikes me in this is that, you know, when voters were convinced to approve Prop 11, they approved Prop 11 largely based on a campaign that talked a lot about gerrymandering, squiggly districts,
The ribbon of shame.
More competition. I mean, that was the Arnold Schwarzenegger sales pitch, which even if some of that happens, and some of that probably will, it can't be done by design. I mean, the initiative didn't allow that. But just like even going back to the whole notion of districts, you know, people who believe that gerrymandering is synonymous with squiggly districts, and it isn't. And these maps certainly show it. The districts are drawn not perfect squares, because of population requirements, because of cities and counties. Cities in California don't have perfect boundaries, and they're all squiggly. And so, you know, you wonder with the first blush look at the public, they go, you know, what is the public? What is the average Joe, whoever that is, Jane?
The average Joe, Jane, who's studying redistricting maps.
Yeah, exactly right. Who is that person? But, I mean, you know, what do people think? I mean, the bottom line is going to be at the election, at the voting booth. I get that. Yeah. But just, you know, in terms of the first look of all of this, I mean, and there are going to be communities that are not kept together. They could not keep every community together. They spent a lot of time, and this is what I want to talk about for a moment. The commission spent a lot of time on this issue of communities of interest, which has, because there's just something wrong with me, has fascinated me for a while, because it is largely a term of art, because it is defined differently in different states across the country. You look at redistricting criteria, they define this very differently. California has a definition written into the Constitution, which was part of Prop 20 last year. But even that leaves room for interpretation. I turn off my phone.
Ding.
Yeah, exactly. And so how you define a community of interest and is important. And the commission, I think, spent a lot of time on communities of interest, because they went and did these public hearings, and they had people come and say, my community is X. It's boundaried by X and Y and Z. And there have been some questions as to whether the commission is doing too much about communities of interest, because the constitutional criteria put that down equal with other categories.
Right.
But again, people are still going to be grumpy, because the lines have to go somewhere. That's kind of an old adage about redistricting.
Of course.
At the end of the day, you got to draw the line somewhere.
Ah, get it? See? Draw the line. Yes. You do have, quite literally, have to draw the line somewhere.
On this conversation, too. But go ahead.
Yeah,
not yet.
Yeah. Let's do that. But what's interesting, the other thing that's interesting is that, you know, part of the sales pitch of Prop 11, remember, it was the Democrats who were strongly opposed. I mean, they were... You know, a lot of Democrats were strongly opposed to the notion of losing their gerrymandering power, both for the legislature and for Congress, even though they're going to likely pick up seats. I mean, that was a criticism of the redraw after the 2000 census, was that it was an incumbent protection act and that Democrats left seats on the table. I mean, that was I think California was the only state where Democrats controlled, you know, the governorship and both houses of the legislature and didn't pick up seats.
But that's what's fascinating about this is that the 2001 process was all about, or not all about, but obviously was criticized for being about incumbents, even at the expense of parties. And I mean, that's kind of where we're going here, is that now incumbents don't get anything, but right, the Democrats stand to make out something if it all looks like it is.
That's just the reality of the demographics of California.
Well, so. let's go to the legislature, because you spent some time on that, you said.
A little bit.
And the legislature, I guess some early number crunching would suggest the assembly could get very close, Democrats very close, if not at the magic two-thirds threshold, if all of the things played out correctly. And I want to stop for a moment and say, remember that these are draft maps. There's going to be a second draft, which actually I did not know, and I don't think most people knew that. Yeah, on July 7th, there's going to be draft 2.
I knew that.
Well, you're smart. And on August 10th will be the final maps that will be certified, and then, barring overturning by the courts, would go into place for next year. So these are draft, I guess is a safe way of calling it. But the assembly does look more favorable for Democrats. Again, and I understand that's a voter registration issue too.
Right.
But that would move them closer there. And then some dynamics that are interesting there too about incumbents who get put in the same district. Two that I think are noteworthy. First of all, in Sacramento, you'd have not one, not two, but three incumbents all drawn into one assembly district, all Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
Roger Dickinson, Richard Pan, and Mariko Yamada. all put in the same district there. And then down in L.A., it looks like you could have Holly Mitchell and Speaker John Perez in the same district, along with Gil Cedillo and Mike Davis, out. But both of them are termed out. What else did you see out of the Assembly or Senate? But we were on the Assembly, I guess. So,
now I'm blanking. I mean, the real sort of macro thing in both houses, I mean, I think particularly in the Assembly, is the two-thirds question. I mean, that is going to be a major factor. And also, it's not just the new maps. Remember, we have new primary rules for Congress and the legislature, where it's the top two vote getters of both parties. Or of any party, regardless of party, rather than the top vote getter from each party advancing to the fall runoff. And already this week we saw the Service Employees International Union talking about trying to play a role and influence Republican districts. Now, a lot of people have dismissed the notion that labor could have an impact in Republican seats, but I talked to some Republicans, some pretty smart Republicans, who are actually concerned about it, that they think that, unlike Congress, where if a Republican is in trouble, there will be money from Washington, from the NRCC, to come in and help them. There are not financial groups in California who will fight to protect Republican legislators, and will not be there to counteract labor's money. So, it'll be very interesting to see how this all plays out. I mean, another note of caution. I mean, not only are the maps not finalized, but remember, after the 2000 district, there was a seat. I'm thinking of the seat that was drawn in the Central Valley. It's supposed to be a state Senate seat. It's supposed to be a Democratic seat.
Right.
Rusty Reyes was going to be the senator from this district. Well, guess what? Jeff Denham, a Republican, a local politician from Merced who had a strong grassroots base, won that seat. And so, even though registration may look a certain way, or it may look like a Democratic district,
right,
or may look like a Republican district,
the dynamics in that district,
there certainly is no guarantee. There's no guarantee that it will be next year, let alone what will happen over the course of the decade while these districts are in place.
And then quickly in the state Senate, I think actually of all of the plans that were released, the state Senate is the one most in flux, I would argue.
Yeah.
And if you went back and to watch the commission over the last several weeks, I almost never saw them talk about the state Senate. They were either always talking about the Assembly or the congressional maps. And I think in part of you can understand why, because in part I think there's this theory, and there's a theory among a lot of people who have their own particular reasons for thinking this in redistricting land, and that's a very strange land to live in.
It is.
That because there are 80 assembly districts and 40 Senate districts, well, then you can put nicely two assembly seats in every Senate district nest them all together.
We did it in the 90s.
They weren't all nested,
yep.
I don't believe. They were all nested
every
in the 90s?
Every single one.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. However, I think the commission saw, and some members today in particular talked about it during the Friday hearing, saw that that doesn't always work to meet all the goals they want to meet. And that gets back to the communities of interest issue, and that it doesn't quite lump everything in the way they want to do it. And so you got some sense that even though all of the maps were approved unanimously today, some of those were probably courtesy votes to continue the conversation. And I would suspect that the Senate is going to be something they're going to look at very soon in this, about whether they can really nest as many of those Senate seats together as they have.
The other issue about the Senate that does not apply to the Assembly and Congress, because Assembly terms and congressional terms are only 2 years. We're going deep into the woods. Yeah, right.
Wait, I feel the audience sleeping.
Crickets.
And now we're getting into the very arcane topic known as deferrals.
I call it numbers.
Numbers. explain why we care, Anthony.
I'm not sure that we do, but here's what I know.
That's a ringing endorsement of this discussion.
Well, look, in 2010, all the even-numbered Senate districts were up for election. And so in 2012, that means all of the odd numbers will be up for election. You have a situation now where Lois Wolk, a Democrat from Davis, has been drawn to the same district as her colleague, Senator Daryl Steinberg, the leader of the Senate, who was just reelected to a four-year term in 2010. They're in the same district. So if that district has an even number, if that number
Let's clarify. Daryl Steinberg currently represents the 6th Senate district.
And Lois Wolk represents the 5th.
Right.
So if that district is numbered, is given an even number, if that remains the 6th district, there will be no election there in 2012. Her term will expire, and she'll have to find her, she will not be eligible to run in that. I mean, there will be no campaign. So, and in the legislature, unlike in Congress, you have to live in your district. And so she won't have a place to run. If that district becomes the 5th district, then Wolk can run, and Steinberg will represent the 6th district, because that's the district he was elected to. Even if it's no matter where it is, if it, the 6th district could be in Yolo or Solano County, and it will still be represented by Daryl Steinberg. So that's another thing to watch, is when the numbers are assigned. Only for the state Senate, it's going to be, you know, another esoteric but perhaps interesting issue.
And not just for legislators, but for staffers, because you're going to find staffers who may or may not have a job. I mean, you know, this doesn't mean ultimately they
Look
won't.
At you, man of the people, well, John
Meyer. I think there's a lot of nervousness about that. And so one of the things that none of these districts have, congressional, assembly, or Senate, none of them have numbers on them as of today in this first draft, which in some ways is awfully hard to, like, then say what district you're talking about. Oh, I'm talking about you know, whatever it was. I mean, they were the most bizarre names I'd ever heard, especially when the names no longer applied to the communities because they had been recrafted. But I digress. So none of them have numbers. They will all have numbers, we're told, in draft two come July 7th. And that's when the Senate issue will be a particular – all of them will be, because then we'll know for sure what's the 23rd Congressional, the 10th Assembly. But it'll be a particular pointed, you're right, in the Senate, where then we see – who is drawn out of an election that they thought they were having? Who's drawn into one that they didn't think they were having? Musical chairs.
Is anybody still awake out there?
I won't play Hello? The crickets. I was going to play the crickets, but I won't do that.
You could do that.
So in closing, how might this – this is the question I kept getting from my editors today. How might this, if at all, affect – oh, there's the crickets.
I was on silent too.
See,
I don't
it
know
just
how
works
that
like that. How will the this is called Fun with iPhones. That's the next podcast. How will any of this, if it does, affect the budget? That's come up with me twice today in conversations with editors, and then actually for a public radio interview I did. And my answer, you give me your take, Mr. York, but my answer was, we don't know. That's our safe answer. But suffice it to say that as the data settles in and people start to really crunch the data, and members of the legislature talk to their political consultants, and they look at some of the things that you can't get directly from the data, because you referred to this a moment ago, the historical trend, right, of an area's partisan affiliation. What constituents did they get? Did they lose? What constituents did they gain? Maybe there would be an impact at the margins, but at the end of the day, this is still an issue about this year's budget, these districts, these members. I have a hard time seeing some major breakthrough because of redistricting.
Yeah, it's hard to say. You try to follow the thinking through on this one. If a Republican legislator suddenly finds themselves in a marginal seat, a competitive seat, perhaps even a Democratic-leaning seat, what's the thinking then? That they will cast a vote for the budget and be spared any political pain? I mean,
or no matter what, a Democrat will run against them and beat them.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't really follow what the logic is.
Maybe you shore up your base as a Republican, thinking that there'll be marginal, multiple Democrats who run against you and will split the vote.
Right. I mean, look, everybody's going to be running in districts where they have to speak to new people. You know, and so does a Republican want to introduce themselves to voters as the guy who voted for the taxes? I don't know. You know, the other issue, and maybe, again, since this is all hypothetical, maybe the numbering comes into play here where you have a legislator. I mean, one of the impacts of the numbering is you can have people who will be effectively limited to 6 years in the Senate instead of 8. And so, you know, I mean, does that mean that we'll have you know, some members who find themselves suddenly termed out. Although when you look at the Republican members who are in play, I mean, Tom Harmon is termed out regardless. Anthony Cannella was just elected. Emerson was just elected.
We're in the Senate now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Tom Berryhill was just elected. I mean, you've got, so maybe this isn't an issue. Sam Blakesley was just elected. So never mind.
Well, it's just it's kind of like, you know, it's a great parlor game, but we just don't know. A lot of things have to happen between now and then. I do think, just back to the general redistricting process, just a couple of quick things. I think that the commission, these are, you know, these people were by design not politically connected. These are people who had not served in office, run for office, made big political donations. There are a whole lot of disqualifiers in the process of picking these commissioners. As a result, these are people who have a D or an R or an independent label, but they are, you know, business people, academics, you know, stay-at-home parents, whatever. And I think that this is going to be very interesting for them to see the people line up to complain, to come to these meetings. Because what they've gotten so far is they've gotten people coming saying, you know, I'm glad you're doing this. Please take care of my community. Now the conversation is going to flip to, look what you did, you people, you crazy people, you. And there's a new pressure point there, I guess, is my point, for members of this commission. And that'll be interesting to watch. And then also, too, the only thing I think I can take from this whole thing is that the only losers as a collective class of people are incumbents. And I'm not saying there aren't
the Jews,
with the
Bob Filner and Sherman versus Berman.
You could say that. I wouldn't. Yeah. But incumbents. I mean, some incumbents will win, but it's not a blow toward the Democrats overall. I know there's a blow toward Republicans, but it's generally an incumbent issue here, because it's incumbents were the only ones who really were shut out of the process. Almost punished, I guess, for being too protective of themselves 10 years ago.
Right. They weren't given consideration. Nobody went out of their way to protect them.
Right.
So, yeah.
We'll see.
I wouldn't. But never underestimate an incumbent.
Well, next week when we get back to the budget, we'll see how everybody's chattering about redistricting. And there's at least Saturday session at this point on the budget in the Senate. The Assembly's gone home. You know, newsflash, there's no deal.
Huh.
So, newsflash, you know what the outcome is going to be this weekend. Next week will be interesting, if for no other reason than a certain date on the calendar means there will be no more paychecks for members of the legislature.
Woohoo!
Yes.
I mean, just for excitement factor.
Just for something different, right?
That's right.
Just for something different. The first time, I would argue, ever, that the June 15th congressional deadline, June 15th deadline for the legislature to send a budget to the governor actually has teeth, actually matters, because somebody won't get paid. And apparently, some are actually don't have any money to pay their bills.
Weird.
Did you say weird?
Yeah.
Well, you know, that'll teach them.
Yeah.
We'll see. Anyway, thanks as always for listening. That's Anthony York from the LA Times. I'm John Myers from KQED. We'll see you next time.